Hobby, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. Welcome to our Mobility Management Podcast, sponsored by Permobile. Today I'm joined by Curtis Merring, OTR, MOT, the Director of Market Development for Manual Products for Permobile. And our topic today will be Power Assist from a Proactive Perspective. Curtis Merring received both his undergraduate psychology degree and master's in occupational therapy at the University of Pittsburgh. While at Pittsburgh, he was involved in research on multiple studies dealing with psychosocial disorders, wheelchair seating, and neurological recovery of the upper extremity for stroke patients. As an occupational therapist and researcher for the past 9 years, Curtis was responsible for treating and investigating spinal cord injury and stroke. He's also worked as a director of therapy services in the geriatric setting, including opening and managing rehabilitation departments at multiple locations. During his time as a director, he developed a program called Seating System Management in Skilled Nursing Facilities and Long-Term Care that was a continuing education course he taught to facilities in Texas and California. Curtis is currently Director of Market Development for Manual Products at Permobile and works closely to develop and bring to market new products for TiLight and Smart Drive. Today's podcast is sponsored by Permobile. Permobile founder Dr. Per Uden believe that helping people achieve the greatest level of independence is a basic human right, and for more than 50 years, Permobile has held fast to that belief. Permobile is a global leader in advanced rehabilitation technology and is passionate about better understanding users' needs and improving their quality of life. Today, those solutions include power wheelchairs, seating and positioning products, power assist, and manual wheelchairs. And you can visit Permobile online at permobileus.com. So Curtis, welcome to our podcast. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Hi, Lori. It's so great to be here today. Thanks for inviting me.
Sure. And today we're talking about power assist technology for manual wheelchair users who self-propel. Now, power assist is not a new idea or technology, but in the past, power assist has been considered largely reactive technology, meaning that it's considered or recommended as an intervention for a problem that already exists, such as shoulder pain or an injury caused by overuse. So the idea of power assist as a proactive intervention, as a technology to consider before the wheelchair user is injured, that's absolutely different than how we've thought before. So Curtis, why is this evolution of thinking so important, and why is it important to think about power assist proactively?
Yeah, well, Lori, behavior is really a hard thing to change in general. And in regards to approaching healthcare proactively versus reactively, this isn't just a complex rehab topic. It's our healthcare system topic, or our total healthcare system topic. In our webinar in February and at our Power Assist talk at ISS, we discussed how the research has shown that within the U.S. healthcare system, we tend to get what is considered to be indicated care from our physicians about 50% of the time, which is kind of unexpected. And this is really a good reminder to us that a system that is as large as the one that we work in really takes individual efforts from the consumer, the ATP, and the therapist to be able to make these types of changes. Our thought, instead of saying, I'll go to power assist when I need it, why not say something like, I'll go to a power assist so that I don't need it in the future? And we're really trying to think about it from that perspective. We want to prevent or decrease injury and overuse as much as possible. And, you know, the statistics are surprising and they're a little bit shocking, really. And it's 75% of wheelchair users complain of shoulder pain, but yet 4.7% of non-wheelchair users actually report of shoulder pain. And that discrepancy is kind of outstanding. Three common considerations that occur for people who are manual wheelchair users, and these considerations for their upper extremities are propulsion, transfers, and reaching. And propulsion is actually something that we can control. We can control the effort you expend on propulsion.
And why is propulsion the part of the equation that we need to focus on?
Well, that's where we can actually have a significant impact on how much effort you use to self-propel. We can't drastically reduce other shoulder-related tasks, such as transfers, without impacting quality of life. A study done in 2015 by Kim, Herr, and Co. showed that most wheelchair users have to transfer 15 to 20 times per day. That's a really hard number to limit when people need to move from different positions. Another activity that is more outside of our control than propulsion is reaching. People who sit in a chair, whether manual or power, are at a lower starting point than when they actually reach. This means that they have to reach greater than 90 degrees more often to reach the same items for people who are not sitting in manual chairs. This increases the chances of impingement in their shoulder, and it can also be complicated further if the person has postural weakness or poor positioning. Propulsion frequency and effort can actually be reduced through power assists. We can help with long distances, going up ramps, starting the chair, which is one of the hardest parts of propulsion, going to summer camps, going to vacation, going through the airports. Really, the list is kind of endless.
I have heard self-propelling wheelchair users say, but propelling is my exercise. This is how I get my exercise, and I don't want to give that up. I don't want to give self-propulsion up. Is that a fair or logical argument against power assist, though?
It's such a great question. It's definitely worth some discussion. And I think really it's a bit more complicated than the way the question kind of sets it up. I try to think of shoulders as having a battery life. And this means that you can use your shoulders for a finite amount of time before they actually start to hurt or before they're injured from overuse. I'd say that most people don't really realize or have a hard time coming to terms with the fact that the shoulder is just not the same as the hip joint. So then if that's the case, the question then becomes, what do you want to do and what do you have control over? Yes, propulsion is something that helps you keep your activity levels up. But I don't know about you, Lori, but when I exercise, I don't do it all day, every day. And when I do other activities that I enjoy, like soccer or biking, I save my energy or my battery life, right, for those activities to get the most out of them. So would you rather spend your shoulder battery life doing your transfers and engaging in items like cycling or other things that you want to do? Or do you want to do it when you're pushing from your office to the bedroom, to the kitchen, up ramps, or those examples? So I understand that, you know, you want to keep your activity levels up and it's really important for us to stay fit. But again, it's more complicated and it turns into a balancing act. And it's not really all or nothing. We have to find out what's best for that person within what they're trying to accomplish each day.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So let's now talk about Permobil's power assist system, the Smart Drive. What are the main ways that Smart Drive can help to reduce the load on shoulders in everyday situations and everyday environments for various users?
Yeah, for me or for what we try to talk about, the best part about Smart Drive is that it's there when you need it. It's power on demand, and the user always gets to decide when and where. So when we're talking about that battery life, or we're talking about what your sort of shoulder profile is or your upper extremity profile is day in and day out, the user is in control of when they want to have the assist and when they don't want to have the assist. It can be started without having to push the chair, which is huge for people who have limited upper extremity function, and it enables people to do more, period. Another friend of mine that I have here in Austin, he's a tetraplegic. He just told me last week, quoted this actually, it's a liberating experience. And when it comes to travel, it makes things that were impossible possible. And that's just, it's just true for so many situations and so many cases for people who actually try using a Smart Drive.
Well, Curtis, that's a great example of someone with tetraplegia, especially finding this very liberating, because I imagine for someone with tetraplegia, there are a lot of things that he's not able to do and maybe wouldn't be comfortable even trying. But now with this additional power when he needs it, very, very helpful option. But let's talk about how easy Smart Drive is to use. We're calling this sort of on-demand power is how we're referring to it, which means when you need it, it's there. When you don't need it, you don't need to use it. But how easy and convenient is it to turn the power assist on and off in the middle of your day as you're moving around and very busy?
Yeah, Smart Drive only weighs 14 pounds. So it, relative to other power assists that are on the market, it's definitely the lightest. And then it attaches to your chair, to a camber tube in the back, to a little bracket that attaches onto it. And literally, even with people with limited hand function, you're able to get this on and off your chair. So if you're bringing it with you, or if you're choosing not to bring it with you, it's really easy to come on and off your chair without that much complexity or issues. And this is a really big deal. And then another really big deal is that it doesn't require you to make any changes to your tailored fit wheelchair, right? It's really important that your wheelchair is fit to you and that your wheelchair reacts to what you want it to do. You don't want to make any changes to it just because you want to add power. So now we have an ability to add a power assist to your chair without changing all the hard work that you, your ATP, and your therapist did to make sure your chair fit for you. It doesn't drastically change how you transport your chair. If, for example, you usually fold your chair or remove the wheels from your chair, all of this is still the same. There's different ways to control and operate the Smart Drive too. Right now, we have a wristband called the Push Tracker, which you can use Bluetooth to control the device. And then we also have switches that opens it up for more people. So if you want to drive it using a button, you're able to do that. And in the future, we're going to be taking this technology and putting it into a swatch, which is coming relatively soon. Smart Drive also has a mobile application called the Push Tracker app that allows you to keep track of how much you're using your Push Tracker, how much you're using your Smart Drive, and how much you're using your shoulders. So we have different metrics called distance, coast time, and just your propulsion, or how many times you're propelling throughout the day, so that you can start to figure out kind of what your shoulder profile is and what you need to be able to do in order to get through the day successfully. And even if that means limiting some of your pushes so that then you can stay in your chair for 2 to 3 extras a day, if you're getting your MBA or if you have 2 kids, these are the types of things that Smart Drive really helps make a difference for people's lives.
Well, it's really great that there is a way that you can actually track how much you're using your shoulders on a given day. For instance, if you're traveling, right, and you're in a huge hotel, you're doing a lot of pushing at the airport, doing a lot of pushing within the hotel, you can actually compare that to what a daily profile might look like when you're at home, and then sort of think to yourself, maybe I need to use Smart Drive a little bit more, be more cognizant of how much I'm pushing, because I am significantly over my usual energy usage for the day, or something along those lines. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. If you know that you usually push this many times per day, usually go this far, usually use your coast time this much, if you start to go to something like a work conference or your kid's soccer tournament or something along those lines, and you're noticing that there's an increase in your pushes and a decrease in your coast time, you can use those metrics or use that data to then say, hey, maybe today's the day I need to use Smart Drive a little bit more so that I make it to the end of the day.
Well, that's amazing. But no CRT discussion, of course, is complete without also talking about funding. So what does the reimbursement landscape look like for Power Assist and for a system like Smart Drive? For example, has Smart Drive been funded? And if so, do you have any advice for seating and mobility teams regarding documentation and justification for the system?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked the question, because this is still a common misconception. We get a lot of questions still about this, whether I'm in the field at a clinic or if I'm at an abilities expo. I was just at a clinic last week and someone told me who has a Smart Drive, they didn't realize that their insurance would have paid for it. And that's really tough because I know people's resources are limited. So Smart Drive has a code and it is funded. The code is a capped rental, which means that it gets reimbursed a little bit differently for the dealer. But at the end of the day, this device is paid for insurance. Now, of course, co-insurances and co-pays, all that is still in existence for the Smart Drive, but that's the same for any CRT product. And honestly, we understand this, and we know that this, one, for CRT, people need resources, and two, if this misconception already exists, that we need to have resources in place for everybody out there. And we do. So the first one I would say that is really helpful is that we have a US funding at Permobil email that will directly contact you to our clinical education team, who has tons of experience with making sure that people know what to write and how to write and how to explain how to make sure that we get this to work with your insurance. So that's a great resource for you in order to get a direct contact with someone who can help you navigate what you need in order to be able to get a Smart Drive. Another great resource that we have is our EasyTie online wheelchair configurator, which any person can use, whether it's a therapist, an ATP, or the consumer. It has an LMN generator on it that will actually create the justification that you need for a Smart Drive. And when I say create justification, what it does is give you kind of a general template of the verbiage that would be expected from your insurance companies. You copy that into your letter of medical necessity, and then you edit it based off of what that individual's needs are. Just Google EasyTie Tie Light and you'll be able to find that. And then lastly, for those people who maybe did get a denial from their insurance. We've seen that occasionally from some Medicaids. Or if you don't have insurance at all, we have the PermaBill Foundation. Anyone can apply here. Again, whether it's the therapist, the ATP, or the consumer, the client themselves. And the website is permabillus.com/foundation. Or again, all you got to do is just Google PermaBill Foundation and you'll be able to find it.
Okay. And just to make sure that we have the correct email address for the funding questions, I have that as us_funding@permobile.com, I believe is the correct email address. So that's a good resource for any listeners who are looking to ask funding questions, maybe about specific cases, because obviously we can't give blanket statements when it comes to funding, but that's a good resource to have if you wanted to ask some more specific questions, I think. And my final question is about the client demographic for PowerAssist and for SmartDrive, because our whole conversation so far has been a very proactive perspective. So based on that, I'm guessing that you would like to see a lot of different clients of different ages, different diagnoses, different situations, maybe even some pediatric clients. I'm guessing that you would like them to be assessed for PowerAssist. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. In my mind, you know, anyone who qualifies for an ultra lightweight manual wheelchair most likely qualifies for a PowerAssist. When I think about trying to justify equipment for people, I go back to power. And, you know, when someone needs a power wheelchair, and I know that that is what they're going to be needing to do their MRADLs and complete the day, I start with power, right? I start with the highest, best technology possible, and then I kind of work down. And that's how I think about with PowerAssist in manual wheelchairs, is that I'm going to get the best fit custom wheelchair for you with a PowerAssist if possible. And then if for some reason you don't justify, then I'll move away from it. But I'm really starting to think about that from the beginning, as soon as I walk into the room, or as soon as they start to walk into my clinic. As we talked about with manual wheelchair users, it's their main means of mobility, right? So if they are moving around through the world where others are meant to walk, this is not a match for people that are in chairs. And applying power to an ultralight manual wheelchair actually improves that match between the person and the environment. And other examples that kind of get looked over that we're starting to talk a lot more about, if you come to any of our classes or if you've been to any of our presentations or webinars, is that hemi propellers and pediatrics sometimes get looked over even more so. Hemi propellers are at an inherent disadvantage relative to people who propel with their bilateral upper extremities. And this was proven by Kirby et al. In his research, just showing that this disadvantage is actually worse for hemi propellers. So if it is worse for hemi propellers, then you could argue, and you should argue, that they actually qualify even more so. And remember, there's these switches that I talked about earlier in programming that can be used to open up the possibility of a smart drive. So if a push tracker isn't the right way to do it, but this person, in fact, I'm thinking of another client that I worked with here who just uses their chair to foot propel through their house, but can't foot propel because they have either an injury or limited strength. If they push the button or push the switch, engage their smart drive, and then get that little burst, now they can go over thresholds and go through carpet, and they're actually now open up to able to go through their house with a lot less effort and issues that they had before. I was in the clinic the other day in regards to pediatrics, and you know, a therapist is obviously concerned, and like we talked about before, with exercise and activity. And the kid got into the pilot that we were doing the evaluation with, the Tylight pilot, and then got out of the Tylight pilot, and I watched him do his transfers onto the floor, and then starts army crawling on his shoulders, which is great because that's his main means of mobility when it comes to him being on the floor and interacting with his kids. But what the therapist and the ATP weren't seeing is that direct correlation or impact of that humerus getting pushed into the joint, into the supraspinatus, as this kid is army crawling through there. So I brought up the idea of smart drive, and you know, they're already going to be pushing 2,000 to 3,000 times per day. They're going to transfer down onto the grounds, and now he's army crawling. So this is a consideration that we want to think about. And lastly, what I'd like to talk about is, what if a younger child with achondroplasia could drive his manual chair by pushing a switch positioned like a gas pedal? These are the things that I think ATPs and therapists and all of us really want for our clients, and great examples of how this can be opened up. We just have to think proactively instead of reactively and make it happen.
Well, that sounds great. And what a great new way of thinking. And what a great way to sort of open up additional opportunities from a very, very young age in some cases, so that shoulders last longer and people can do what they really want to do all day. That's wonderful, Curtis. Thank you so much. It's great to see such a proactive perspective for Power Assist, which has maybe been underutilized a little bit to this point. I hope that this can start some new conversations among therapists and ATPs and manual wheelchair users as well regarding the roles that Power Assist can play in a wheelchair user's life. And so with that, we'll be wrapping up this podcast on proactive Power Assist. My thanks to Curtis Maring for sharing his experiences and perspectives on Power Assist, and thank you to Permobile for sponsoring our podcast. Mobility Management Podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our podcasts is to subscribe, and you can also go to our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back again soon.